Dear friends, Jesus said, "My peace I give you." Out beyond the tender loyalty and love of a friendship with Jonathan, David was now entering darkness. He was on the run, and he'd have to slip from cave to cave, literally, to escape Saul. We're at chapter 21 of Samuel, and I'm going to flavor that mildly so that we can hit chapter 25 on the run, and it really makes it significant. You see, what was happening was that David was alone now, a fugitive. He slipped away to Nob, that's a small town north of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was very close to the border of Judah and Benjamin, and up there was at least a shrine, more likely the tabernacle where the Ark of the Covenant was. And it was a place of refuge. So David went and he greeted Ahimelech, the priest. Now the priest smelled a rat. Here comes the captain of the guard, the most famous soldier of Israel, alone, without Saul. Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, "Why are you alone? And why is no one with you?" Somehow, perhaps because of a bully in our neighborhood or some complications in our dreams, we feel like we're on the run. We're hunted. And we're a fugitive like David. I will tell you there is a lesson here, a deep one to learn, because when we feel that way, we turn more animal than human. And we vow to survive. But God calls us to follow the way of peace. We're going to go from David simply surviving to remarkably a grace-filled thriving. David, in spite of his good intentions, simply survives. We start with his lie. He lies his way into and through the tabernacle. "The king has ordered me on some secret business," he says to Ahimelech. "The king charged me with a certain matter and said to me, 'No one is to know anything about your mission and your instructions.'" Keep it secret. "As for my men, I told them to meet me at a certain place." There were no men. "Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever you can find." You see, all of this was a reasonable lie. It could play with Ahimelech. At least he would be sworn to secrecy. He was too smart for that, but Ahimelech was in the position of a priest. By his ordination to do mercy ministry, often there would be bags of food, bags of bread that they would give away when somebody came in, like David, in poverty and need. But there was none this time. Ahimelech said, "I don't have any ordinary bread on hand. However, there is some consecrated bread here." So he rations out a meal or two. Now, we do that sometimes. In the most extreme circumstances, you bend the normal procedures. Parents do it sometimes when a child's sick. You can see it in war when a fellow soldier will give his compadre, Lord's Supper. And they clear it and they okay it because extreme circumstances call for the need. And in need, Ahimelech gave him the consecrated bread. And when Jesus was going through the fields, you remember, and the disciples pulled the grain, the Pharisees are complaining. What does Jesus say? He said, "Didn't David eat the bread from the table of showbread?" But in all of this, there's another strain going on. Someone lurks in the shadows and overhears. His name is Doeg. He's one of the leading shepherds of Saul's flock. David asked Ahimelech, "Don't you have a spear or a sword here?" "I haven't brought my sword or any other weapon along." That's a telltale sign for a soldier. And Ahimelech says, "Well, there's only one sword here. It belongs to Goliath, the giant that you killed in the valley of Elah." And David said, "That's good enough for me. Give it to me. And he said, there's none like it. So out goes David on the run. There's some episodes here that just defy. You really need to read the Bible. Why should you watch, you know, TV, daytime TV? You want drama? Read the scriptures. He goes to Gath, one of the five Philistine cities, carrying the sword of Goliath. It happens to be Goliath's hometown. Gallivanting in through the front gates. Can you imagine the whispering going on? And in fact, as it reaches Achish, the king, the news gets a little bit vibrant. And he begins to assemble the whole army. That made David a little nervous. Just because, you know, you can kill one Goliath, but the whole army of the Philistines, So here's where the intrigue pops in. You gotta give David credit for a quick tongue and a quick mind, but notice that he simply survives. So David pretended to be insane in their presence, and while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate, scratching, and letting saliva run down his beard. Word comes to Achish and he says, look at this man, he's insane. Why are you bringing him to me? Am I so short of madmen that you have to bring this fellow here to carry on like this in front of me? That is the rapid movement of a fugitive. If you remember back that far, in the 60s it was David Jansen. In the 90s, well, it was Harrison Ford. A fugitive moving and barely escaping from town to town. Every episode's, you know, fraught with danger and excitement because you're about to die. Well, when David gets to the cave of Adullam, word goes out to his family and the extended friends. And notice what occurs. Something strange. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around David. And he became their leader. About 400 men were with him. Sizable army. But who was it? I suppose you would call this in modern terms, Robin Hood and his merry men out in the forest, Sherwood, and running away from the sheriff of Nottingham. Yep. David the original. Now, what we watch as we develop this story in chapter 21 is, the reaction it causes. Saul now calls out for allegiance at all costs. And here's where Doeg plays back in. He finds out from people that David was on the run. He calls his captains and says, is David going to be your commander? Is David going to give you lands? Are you conspiring with my son and the son of Jesse? And they all swear they're not. So Saul calls in Ahimelech. And he says, did you give David bread and weapons? And Doeg sees his chance. He goes, I heard it all. I was there. I was a witness. Yes, it happened. Saul commands his soldiers to kill Ahimelech. He had assembled all of the priests. And they won't do it. But Doeg, he's looking for the commendation of the king. Draws a sword, draws the first blood, kills Ahimelech. They put 85 priests of Nob to the sword. And that wasn't enough bloodshed. They went home. They wiped out the entire town. Men, women, and children. You recognize how depraved and paranoid Saul has become? And actually, even though Saul and Doeg are the real villains, who was it that put them at risk? It was David. He threw the whole lot of them under the bus, didn't he? And so, I want you to hear, there's a Latin phrase that goes along with this. It's called coram Deo, in the face of God. Before the face, you're always in front of God. David too. And when you're simply surviving, you're often using mechanisms and manipulations of the world. In fact, David is going to be stricken with remorse. Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, escaped and fled to join David. He told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. Then David said to Abiathar, That day when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he would be sure to tell Saul, I am responsible for the death of your father's whole family. Stay with me. Don't be afraid. The man who is seeking your life is seeking mine also. You will be safe with me. Have you ever had it where the stress is building that you actually know you're going to mess up? You're going to come apart at the seams like David, like a vagabond. You're going to be fragmented. I mean, there's been some times when it starts building at the beginning of the week and I come to my wife and say, honey, I'm going to apologize in advance because I think I'm going to be short and snippy. And sure enough, I have to apologize again because I get short and snippy. But is it just surviving? Remarkably, God wants us to thrive. And there's a call to grace here by another person. It sticks out. And it should be something that you catch. With God's intention, we gracefully thrive. David expected those around him to live by the golden rule. He was in chapter 25 able to show some kindness and defense for the flocks and the shepherds of Nabal. And because he was camped in the region, there was, he hoped, an exchange of goodwill. So in the intervening chapters, you can watch the roller coaster. It goes up and down. David messes up, and all the priests are killed. And a little bit later, he's going to stand over the top of Saul, able to kill him. Because from cave to cave, Saul doesn't realize when he goes in to relieve himself that there's a lurking tiger. You remember that story? It's not part of this series. But David sneaks up and cuts off part of the royal robe and holds it up in front of Saul's face and says, hey, Saul, when you were indisposed, guess what I did? And Saul relents. You see how David shows kindness and peace towards the anointed? You and I have a lot to learn. And so did David, though. In this episode, it turned sour. And had he not been enabled by God's grace, he would have done the wrong thing in a bad way. In fact, in chapter 25, David is saved by a woman. Now admit it, men, there's been a lot of times when you've been saved by a woman right at the last minute. You were going to do something you shouldn't have done, and she got in front of you. You know? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, it feels natural to reciprocate on both sides of the equations. But have you ever noticed the bully's version of dominoes? If you can't strike back at a coworker or your boss, what do? You bring it home, don't you? A kid gets out of sorts and imbalanced with a friend at school and comes home, and what does he do? It's that little brother that irks me. And he takes it out. Some of you are the little brother. And then you take it out on the little sister. And you see, you change environment because you do not know how to solve the situation. But you're certainly not going to be taken advantage of. Survival means you pass it on down the line. David was about to do that. Here's the story. A certain man in Maon, who had property there in Carmel, was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. That doesn't impress us that much in modern America, but you should say, hey, that dude was really rich. His wife's name, Abigail, was a beautiful, intelligent woman. He was surly, a pain. His name meant fool. So David sent 10 young men and went and said to them, go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet them in my name. So while they're shearing sheep, you have to understand this is a great time to get something back from the boss. Because he's counting, he's doing the reckoning, and if everything goes well, he's likely to see his abundance and be very generous. It was like any harvest festival. There's partying and there's good times. David sends his servants there and says, will you share with us? Because when you were out in the field, we guarded your men and your flocks. Therefore, be favorable towards my young men, since we come at festive time. Give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them. But here comes Nabal's response. And it causes David to want to give him a dose of his own medicine. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse?" He knew. "Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days." Basically, how long is he going to run as a fugitive before Saul's going to catch up to him? "Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shears and give it to men coming from who knows where?" You get the narrative? There's a lot going on here. David's men turned around, reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords and David put on his. Do you know self-control is like any other muscle? If you don't ever use it, it's not going to be very strong. And here was a time for David to exert the strongest self-control. But you know, the saying is, hurt people hurt people. And if you've been hurt, you go a-hurting. David slaps on a sword because he has every intention of wiping out everything from Nabal. He was going to kill at least every male in the whole clan. And with 400 men, it was pretty easy for him to do that. Nabal did not really reckon the balance. David throws caution to the wind. He begins to justify. You can see him like a snake skin, snaking his way through the back valleys. Little does Nabal and the shearing men who are working hard realize the danger that's creeping up. He may have been within a couple hundred yards when he rounds a corner and gets surprised by Abigail. "What are you doing here?" He almost, nailed her with a sword. And she falls down on her knees before him. Now this is where it really gets interesting. The servants had disposed Abigail by saying, "Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." And frankly, Abigail couldn't either. So she intervened. She took 100 cakes of raisins, 200 cakes of pressed figs, 5 dressed sheep, 2 skins of wines, 200 loaves of bread, probably enough for a nice meal for the guys. And she fell face first before David. She did not tell her husband, Nabal. Just before she came around the corner, David said to himself, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He paid me back evil for good." And I'm going to slow this down because it is really rich and you might miss it. Abigail melts his heart with grace. When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed before David with her face to the ground. This totally catches him off guard. Ladies, you know how to do this, but don't stop doing it. I mean, every girl knows how to get their guy. You know, your muscles are so strong, I bet you could carry the garbage out with one hand. And the guy knows what's happening. He can see he's being manipulated and controlled, but he goes, "Hey, you want to watch me?" I mean, this is almost like a Jedi mind trick that she plays. She gives him credit for being a better man than he is. "My lord," she fell at his feet, "let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak. Hear what your servant has to say. Don't pay any attention to that wicked man, Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is Fool. But for me, I did not see the men my master sent." And so she's there to meet him. She calls upon David as though he was the future king. I wish everybody would treat each other this way. Treat each other with the respect that they deserve and what they are becoming, not what they are now. And among children of God, who we really are. Do you realize how precious these kind of texts are for our relationships? This is grace in action. As Abigail teaches David a huge lesson, she even uses the language of a soldier, she says, even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. What does that mean? Whew. Basically, she's saying, God has put you in his wallet. You're that precious to him. I mean, maybe it's at the bottom of a woman's purse. Don't ever ask a man to find something in her purse. But if it's really special, it's buried down in there somewhere deep, right? And then, but the lives of your enemies, he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. Does that kind of reminisce the battle with Goliath? She uses language David can understand. And he melts. When the Lord has done this for my master, every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or having avenged himself. David's response is on the screen. May God be praised for your good judgment. You know, and it is kind of humorous in a way. It's an ironic thing that she waits with her wisdom until he's sober to tell Nabal how bad it could have been. And it strikes him like a heart attack. An aneurysm. 10 days later, Nabal's dead. And you can just about see the smirk or smile on Abigail's face when she gets called up for wife duty and bundles up her 5 maidservants and says, sure, I'll go with you, David. There are 3 behaviors that are represented here. Nabal, the self-serving, greedy kind. That's all he wants, is for himself. And David, he's fair, but he basically is saying, let's get even. Do you really want to get even with somebody you don't even like? Or you want to be like? You are lowering yourself to their standard. Doesn't it make sense not to be like them? And when the story is told in the end, or you tell the story, what do you want it to say? I got even. I left a pile of bodies and blood. No way. You see how easily it is to slip into animal behavior and survive, but this is not God's way of peace. Abigail is the one who incarnates Christ here. For whoever would love his life keeps his lips from deceitful speech, says Peter. Do not repay evil with evil. Peter says this. What a changed man. In 1 Peter 3, he says, repay evil with blessing. Wouldn't you rather want it to be said, you didn't give them what they deserve? No, that's mercy. Or maybe that you gave them grace. You gave them what they didn't deserve. This is amazing how biblically Christ-like some of the affairs in the Old Testament are. Returning good for evil may be the most incarnational thing you can do to show God is in you, that Christ is with you. Don't settle. Don't settle for that old survival mode. Go into the way of peace and give God control. Amen.